Turn with me, church, to Gospel of John. We're going to be in chapter 11 this week. And if you're wondering where I'm going to be, I'll be in the CSB version. If you want to follow along with electronic device or anything like that, that's where I'll be. And this week we come to another story, and I love the stories that we get to see in the Gospel of John. They're beautiful. You can see how John has picked them and kind of picked the ones he wants us to see because he's always trying to help us see who Jesus is. And last week we ended in chapter 10 with this verse 42, and it just says after 9, and we've seen the story there, and 10, the teaching that Jesus brought is coming out of that story. We have this great verse, and many believed in him. And this is the theme we see written throughout John. If you remember when we started this series, we went to John chapter 20, look ahead, and John's like, why did he write this? And he said he wrote this so that we might believe that Jesus is the Son, that he is the Messiah. And so all of this is written for us so that we with more confidence and more conviction would believe who Jesus is, would know more of who Jesus is. So as we continue with this idea of belief, I want to ask this question, what is it that we really believe in? It's a good question to ask as we talk about faith. It kind of becomes this buzzword. Yes, I believe, but what is it that we believe in? Because if we get really honest about the idea of belief, we might recognize that it's really easy to believe when things are going as we expect them to, right? When Jesus is doing the things we'd expect him to do the way we'd expect him to do it. But what about when it stops making sense? What about when Jesus begins to do something that we can't understand? We don't know the why. We might even be saying, why God? Why is this happening? And we struggle with how God is doing what he is doing. So then how do we respond in faith? How do we respond then with what we believe? And there's a question that I want us to ask ourselves this morning. I think it's a key question that John is trying to help us understand throughout the book. And it's this question, is who Jesus is enough when we don't understand why or what he's doing? It's a good question to think about. Is who Jesus is enough when we don't understand why or what he is doing? And so we get into John chapter 11, we get into this story, I think we're going to see two things. We're going to see the humanity of Jesus. In the middle of the humanity, recognizing that he was God who came here, we're also going to see his divinity. And I love how these two come together, especially in this story, and how we get to see the fullness of who Jesus was as he walked this earth. And it reminds me of when we started in John chapter 1, this prologue to this book, and the author is setting this up, and he's wanting us to get this picture to see Jesus. This is what he says in verse 14. He said, the Word, and he's talking about Jesus, became flesh, and he dwelt among us. And we observed his glory, the glory as the one and only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. But go back to that statement, the Word of God became flesh, and he dwelt among us. As we get into John 11, I think this is a story of deep revelation of who Jesus is that we might easily miss. We talked about this on the podcast a little bit, how I grew up listening to the story in Sunday school. This is one of the stories that I knew, that I could probably tell you about. I could quote to you. And then when I read it again, as I get older and more mature in my faith, I'm like, wow, there's so much here that's so easy to miss. So let's see how Jesus begins to reveal himself to us as his Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We're going to start in the really beginning, John 11, start with verse 1. It starts like this. Now a man was sick, Lazarus from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair, and it was her brother Lazarus who was sick. So the sister sent a message to Jesus. They said, Lord, the one you love is sick. And when Jesus heard it, he said, this sickness will not end in death, but is for the glory of God, so the Son of God may be glorified through it. And now Jesus loved Martha, her sister, and Lazarus. And I want us to start with this theme that John's like, he's bringing out through this, just these opening verses right here. It's the idea of love. It's this theme that I think John wants us to see in this story. It's the context of Jesus' relationships. These were the people that he loved. That was the first appeal. Jesus, the one that you love so much, he's the one that's sick. This is what they knew to appeal to because they knew the relationship that Jesus had with him. And then John even comes there again as he's closing these first couple of verses, and he speaks again of his deep love for Mary and Martha and Lazarus, and even describes Mary as the one, which has actually not happened yet in John. It's coming up in the next chapter, of the one that anointed Jesus' feet. Again, this great act of love that showed the depth of their relationship, of the love and relationship that they had with Jesus. These were the Messiah's friends. These were the people that he was close with. These were like his extended family of friendships and relationships that he loved so deeply. And so then you have this. You see the ones that he loved so dearly. Jesus hears this. He hears that this one he loved, his friend, he's sick, he's suffering. Things aren't looking good. Jesus, will you please come? And then look how he responds right here in verse 6. It says, so when he heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. And if you're reading this story for the first time, you got to be saying, wait, you're staying two more days. Did you not see your friend sick? The one you love is sick. I mean, you've just said you loved him. We understand this relationship, and we'd read that and we'd say, this can't possibly be love. Love doesn't hear that someone's suffering, that someone's sick, that can help, and then waits and stays. This doesn't look like love to us, right? And I admit it, when I read something like that, that's where my instinct would go too. This doesn't seem to be what I would say love is. And yet there's an important truth that we need to understand about who God is. Because when God does things outside of what I think love is, when he moves outside of my definition, I have to come back to what 1 John 4:8 tells me, that God is love. Everything God does is through love. Everything Jesus does is in the context of love. It's driven by love. Love is just flowing out of him. God is love. And so when I'm in a situation like this, and we all find ourselves in these, when I look and see, this doesn't seem to make sense, God. Why would you do that? That doesn't seem loving. Oh, that doesn't seem like the right way to show love. We have to pause a little bit and ask ourselves, so who is love? Is it me? Is David Baxley love? No. Who defines love? The creator of the universe, the one that is love. And so when I find myself in that situation, and it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem loving, I have to step back and say, but I'm not love, but God is. So God, help me understand your love. Help me understand what real love is. And it always starts with Jesus. And so the middle of God's love, we also see there's even more to what Jesus is saying. Look back at what he said in verse 4. He said, the sickness, hey, it's not going to end in death, but it's for the glory of God, so the Son of God may be glorified through it. And this takes us back, verse 4 does, all the way back to chapter 9, just a few weeks ago when Tyler preached. And this idea of sickness existing, this is happening, the suffering's even happening for God's glory. And as we come to this verse, I think it kind of begs this question for us. And we actually asked this question just a few weeks back in our Grow Group questions as we were coming out of chapter 9. And we asked this question, is the statement for God's glory enough to have peace in any situation when I can't understand what is happening, why it's happening? Is the statement for God's glory enough when I can't have any other answers except to know it's for God's glory? Can I have peace in that? When he moves and it doesn't make sense, it's not my ways, I have to maybe ask that question, what is my faith really about? Come back to our key question, who is my faith really about? And see, the thing is, Jesus was all about God's glory too. As we look and understand, and we look at the life of Jesus, we would see that Jesus ask anything of us, that he didn't show us, that he didn't live by example, that he wasn't willing to do. Think all the way to the garden. As Jesus is praying, and he's just hours away from suffering, from the cross, from the torture and the pain that he was going to endure. And we actually see in this beautiful picture of his humanity and divinity as well. And he cries out, he said, God, is there any way I don't have to suffer? If there's any way I don't have to go through this, can you show me that way? Can we go that direction? But then he also comes back at the end and says, but God, not my will, but your will be done. He closes with the heart that he's been saying throughout his entire life, but not my glory, for your glory, God. It's not about us. And this is a beautiful picture of surrender, guys. It's a beautiful picture of surrender, seeing the life of Jesus and of trust in who God is, even in the most difficult of circumstances. And the disciples, they're wrestling with the same thing too. Like what Jesus is even saying isn't making sense to them. Look what it says in verse 7. So after Jesus kind of shared what's going on, he says to his disciples, all right, let's go to Judah again. All right, let's go. And then the disciples respond and they say, Rabbi, the disciples told him, just now the Jews tried to stone you and you're gonna go back there again. It's almost like they're saying, hold on, Jesus, what are you thinking? I mean, can you imagine having that conversation with God? God, don't you remember? Don't you know these facts that I'm about to reveal to you, creator of the universe? And yet, if I'm really honest, I see myself in these guys. When something doesn't make sense to me, this is how I respond in my own humanity. This is how I began to see. And what happens is we miss Jesus in the circumstances that surround our own human perspective. When we see things just through our human perspective, through our human definitions of love or good, or our human definitions of how we think things are gonna happen, we're gonna miss Jesus. Our humanity, it causes us to see Jesus just in humanity. And we miss seeing Jesus in his divinity. That makes sense? How you see how that could happen, that our own humanity, we just see Jesus in humanity and we miss seeing his divinity. Because when I can't see or remember, I have to always know God always knows. God is always in control. As Tyler said a few weeks back, and when we were in 9, he said, remember, God is a planner. He's not a reactor. This is who God is. And so Jesus even says to the disciples in this like slightly cryptic but yet direct statement, he says to them, starting in verse 9, as they're wrestling with this as well, he said, listen, guys, aren't there 12 hours in a day? If anyone walks during the day, he doesn't stumble because he sees the light of the world. And who's the light of the world? We've seen this throughout John. This is Jesus. But if anyone walks during the night, he will stumble because the light is not in him. And he's coming back and he's saying, guys, remember, if you're with me, you remember I'm in control. I've got this. You walk with the light. The light is leading. The light has the authority. The light is the one doing exactly what it wants to do to accomplish exactly what it needs to accomplish. And so then when we're in these situations, can we hear Jesus saying, guys, can you believe that I have control? Can you trust when you can't see things, when we struggle with seeing what and why, can we see who Jesus is, even through our own pain, our own suffering, even the hard times that we can't even understand, even our own brokenness? I'll never forget this one. It was Sunday after church, on a couple days after Christmas, and I had Desmond, and I was cleaning up. He was next to the sink, and I was helping him get cleaned up after he was eating. And I leaned over to do something, and while I did that, he leaned over and he's put his arm under some scorching hot water and just poured on his arm, and he instantly just started screaming. And there's nothing else we knew to do. I ripped off his clothes so I can get the hot water off as best I can, and then I saw it, and the skin was just hanging off his arm. I grabbed my son, and my wife got in the car, and she drove, and we're going to the ER right there. I'm in the back with my son, and I'm just trying to comfort him, saying, Desmond, I love you. Daddy's going to take care of you. I reach out, and I hold his hand, and as I hold his hand, and as I'm telling him, Daddy's going to take care of you, you're going to be okay, he quiets down. He just calms right down, and he just holds my hand, and he looks at me. Even while his skin was hanging off his arm, even while he was scared, even while he didn't know what was happening, he didn't understand why this was even happening. This is a little one-year-old boy. But you know what he did? He heard his daddy's voice, and he trusted his dad, that his dad had the ability to be in control in that moment to take care of him. Where he felt safe in his father's arms. Even when he didn't understand what was going on. Oh, I love that picture. He's just such a cute kid. You know, church, right? Amen. So, like, I had, like, 5 from this day, and I had to only pick 1. All right, so, like, but even while in that moment, he had peace as I was able to hold him. Guys, the pain was still there. He didn't understand it. The confusion was still there. But he was willing to trust me because he knew I was going to take care of him. He knew at that moment that he couldn't do anything, but Daddy could take care of him. And that's what Jesus is saying. If you will just trust that when we walk with him, we're walking in the light, that he's got control. But when we remove ourselves from that, when we try to take control ourselves, when we try to do it in our own power, when we try to figure this out, or even maybe when we say, no, that's not the right way to do things, God, and we try to recorrect what God is doing, then we do the opposite of what Jesus was saying, as he said, but then we're walking in the darkness and we'll stumble and we'll fall and we'll miss walking with the one who is in control. And we recognize that these hard times, they don't change who God is. Why believe in who he is when I can't see what he's doing? And that's where Jesus brought it with these men in verse 14. And it says, and Jesus told them plainly, guys, Lazarus has died. And then verse 15, he says, and I am glad for you that I wasn't there so that you may believe. But let's go to him. And if you're hearing the story and you did not know the end and Parker hadn't ruined it in announcements, you know what I'm saying? Like if you did not know yet, you've got to be going, wait a minute, I know this Jesus guy. That's not how the story is supposed to happen. That is not how this is supposed to be going. What? He's dead. And not only that, you have to say, what did Jesus say? I'm glad. That's not who I thought Jesus was. And we begin to wrestle. And then Jesus says, but let me tell you why. Because he's seen something bigger than what we often see in our pain and our struggle. But he's seen something that's beautiful for us. He says, so that you might believe. So that you would have hope. So that you would know who I am. And in knowing who I am, that you might believe more and more and have hope and confidence and trust and surrender in who Jesus is. And the story doesn't end there. And in that moment of pain, Jesus is still on the move. And then Jesus comes and he's going to meet us in our humanity. He heads to the home of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. And he meets them. And picture this, as Jesus is coming and they're running up to him, tears in their eyes, mourning pain. The brother has died. Verse 20, it says, as soon as Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to him. And then Martha said, Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And yet even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. And then later in verse 32, Mary comes out to meet Jesus as well. And she says the same thing. As soon as Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell to his feet and told him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And I want us to hear this through the context of the great hurt and mourning that they are going through. They are saying, this was not supposed to happen. Jesus, we sent for you. We might even say today, Jesus, didn't you hear my prayers? I cried out to you. There was time for you to intervene. Why didn't you come? This did not have to happen this way. And then Jesus speaks these words of comfort to them. And look what he says, how he's trying to comfort them in verse 25. He said to them, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. And he says, do you believe this? And Jesus says to them, he says, remember who I am. Remember who I am. Believe in me. And he comes back to that, this foundational truth. Do you believe this? Do you believe in who I am? And Martha says, yes, I believe you are the Messiah. You are sent from God. But the truth is, with this question, this is where our true battle of faith lies in the moments of crisis. If we're really honest with ourselves, like we can say, and maybe I've grown up the church and I know the Bible, and we can say, you know, I know these answers right here. But when the matter of faith comes, I begin to struggle to believe them right here. In pain. And hurting, they seem conflicting, they don't make sense, and then my mind and my heart, they become at war with each other in the middle of all of this. And we struggle to see who Jesus is. But you know what the thing is about Jesus? He totally understands us. He totally knows us. He knows our brokenness. He knows our humanity. And just like with them, he comes and meets us in our humanity, in our brokenness, coming to meet us in our pain. Look what it says here at verse 33 and how he meets them because of how much he loved them. It says, When Jesus saw her crying and the Jews who had come with her crying, it says he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. And he said, "Where have you put him?" Lord, they told him, "Come and see." And then verse 35, Jesus wept. And this is such a powerful set of verses for us, because I believe John is trying to reveal more of who Jesus is to us. He's trying to help understand who Jesus is. Aeneas was moved. His spirit was deeply moved, and he was troubled. He felt their pain. He knew where they were at. He loved them. And somebody he loved was hurting. And I'm reminded of this wonderful verse from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, where it says, "For we do not have a high priest," speaking of Jesus, "who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses." Like, he gets it. He knows our pain. He knows our suffering. When we are in the middle of this, Jesus is not just on the outside looking at, saying, "It's okay, it's okay." He's in the middle of the pain with us. As you would look at this idea, especially this phrase of being deeply troubled, this idea of the pain that they were feeling, one commentator said it like this, and I just want to read this because I think it says it so well. He says this phrase, it indicates this the strong display of emotion, as if Jesus was shuddered. He was so moved. It was affecting his body passionately of the deepest emotions, and the people around him could see this. And the verb used here, it actually describes like this deep anger, indignation, just this passion of just frustration and anger that we could probably relate to in times of suffering. And so then we ask the question, what was Jesus angry at? Who was he angry at? Was he angry at those that were suffering, that were struggling to believe, that were in pain, that said, "Why, Jesus, if you had just been here, this wouldn't have happened"? Absolutely not. No, instead, Jesus, what he was angry at, he was angry because he found himself face to face with the manifestations, the realities of Satan's kingdom of evil, of death and destruction and pain and the consequences of sin. The power of the sin and that how it affected the world that he loves and how he affected the people that he loves. And deep in his spirit, he was moved and troubled at what he saw, and he wept for all to see as he wept with them. And that was Jesus and his humanity and his divinity coming together, recognizing who he was and how he's meeting us. He knows what they're feeling. He doesn't just know what we're feeling, guys. He feels with us. That's a powerful phrase of comfort. But Jesus doesn't just leave them hanging. And as his heart of love and compassion, as it moves in him, he comes along and he begins to do exactly what he had said, what he was in the works of doing all along when he didn't go. And we said, "Wait, what? You're not going?" When he said, "I'm glad I wasn't there," you're like, "What? You're glad?" And he continues with what he was doing all along. Verse 38, and then Jesus deeply moved again. Guys, he's feeling it. And he came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone was lying against it. And he says, "Remove the stone." And now we see like how God is moving. Guys, up to this point, maybe it didn't make sense. And up to this point, we're like, "That's not how I thought you'd move." And now we see a little bit something maybe we would expect. But even then, as it's like, "Hey, what's going on?" Then verse 39, Martha's like, "Lord, there's already a stench. He's been dead for 4 days. What are you doing? Like, it's too late, God." Let's just move on. But Jesus says, no. In verse 40, "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? Didn't I tell you you would see the glory of God if you would just believe?" And this is where it all comes together. If you will believe, if you believe, you can see what God is doing. We began to see when we couldn't see before, when we began to see things through God's perspective, we would begin to say, "God, help us understand your eyes. Help us understand what is driving your heart to see things for what motivates you for your glory and your purposes." Then we can begin to believe in who Jesus is, and it will help us see when we couldn't see before. And don't let what we just see in front of us from just our human perspective deceive us. When we can't see what God is doing, always remember God is on the move. God is always doing, and it doesn't end here. God is not done. Verse 41, So they removed the stone, and then Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you heard me. I know that you always hear me, but because of the crowd standing here, I said this so that they may believe that you sent me." It wasn't just about the disciples. There was even more happening that God was on the work doing. And in verse 43, after he said this, he shouted with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, bound hand and foot with linen strips, with his face wrapped in cloth. And Jesus said, "Unwrap him and let him go." And now we come back to what Jesus said. Remember, I am the resurrection and the life. And this is a promise to us. Guys, when we see God fulfilled, yes, it's easy to say, "Oh, this is what he was doing. Now I believe. Oh, now this is great." But the truth is, we're going to see God do something. How many things had they already seen God do? How many miracles had they already seen Jesus perform, right? And yet in the moments of their pain and hurt, they begin to question. There's this crisis that happens, and our humanity just battles, our flesh battles with what we know and who we see God is. And Jesus is allowing us to see in this story, this is so important. This is the key thing, that no matter how it turns out, won't always end just like this, but no matter how it turns out, Jesus wants us to see that he has the final word. No circumstances, no other situation, no other person, no other entity, no other power can thwart God's plans. God has the final word. More than just in this life, though, we see this from a bigger perspective, the eternal perspective that Jesus was speaking about when he said who he was, the resurrection and the life, that he who believes will never die. You know, Lazarus, he came out of the tomb and he lived, and that was fantastic for all those around him. But you know what happened at some point in his life? He died again. Suffered again, and he died. We don't know how, we don't know what happened, but we know he died because we know that that is a part of life. But what Jesus is speaking to is not just this moment where he shows up in our lives right now, but for us to have a big perspective of who he is. A big perspective to look and see this is who Jesus is. He is absolutely in control. And no matter what, with Jesus, we live. Though Lazarus died again, he still lives. He believed. God was on the move. God was working in his life. And we have those promises. We have who we see Jesus is in the story. Guys, because this is a story of hope. This is a story of comfort. Yeah, it can be a hard story when you tell it, you know, as through their eyes as they're experiencing it. But at the same time, there is great hope and there is great confidence in what we see. Because again, at the end of the story in verse 45, we see same thing we saw in chapter 10, verse 42. And it said that many of the Jews who came to Mary, now remember who Mary was? She's the one that was struggling. She's the one that's hurting. She's the one in pain. Mary's the one that said, "Jesus, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died." Remember that Mary? But verse 45, it says that many of the Jews who came to that same Mary and they saw what he did, they believed. They heard the testimony of Mary. Mary was able to say who Jesus is. She was able to speak of his power, of his love, of his compassion. And as she tells the story, I know, because we see this in Mary, man. She's telling the whole story because she has this love for Jesus, where she just wants to just be with him. We see this in other stories in the gospel. And so you know what she's telling the story? It's with that great, great passion and that great love that she has for him that she knows that he has for her. And so come back, church, where we started this morning, just for a moment with me, and how John is trying to help us see Jesus more fully, to see maybe a side of Jesus that we might easily miss, the full picture of what it meant for the Word to become flesh and dwell among us, to have the high priest who sympathizes, who understands our weaknesses and our pain. We see fully divine, and we see his humanity. And we see that because of that, we have a God that comes and meets us in our humanity, in our brokenness, in our pain, in our suffering. And guys, not with anger, not with frustration, not with annoyance, but he feels our pain because he understands it. He's hurting with us because he loves us like we all do with those that we love. And so now we come back to that key question we were asking beginning this morning. When things aren't going as we expect, but we say we believe, when things aren't happening, when Jesus is not doing what we thought he was gonna do, how will you and I believe? Will I believe just in what I see him do? Or am I willing to believe fully in who Jesus is? It's that key question. Is who Jesus is enough when we don't understand why or what he is doing? Do I trust that he loves me? Do I trust that he is love and that he is moving in love? Do I trust this idea that Jesus recognizes that as he even moves in his love for me, though he is completely driven by what he wants us to be driven by, what he was willing to suffer for, God's glory? Is even the phrase again, for God's glory enough when I can't understand it? Well, that can that give us peace? And guys, when I say gives us peace, that doesn't mean there's no pain. That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. That doesn't mean we don't. It means that in the middle of our brokenness and our humanity and our suffering, as we meet Jesus and we're reminded who he is, we can have peace that God is always on the move. So I want to just ask this question this morning. How can we respond to a story like this? My guess is I look on this room, as I know who's probably watching online, that there are many of us who are in moments of pain. And if we're not there right now, we're gonna get there. And so there's a big question to ask. Yes, we wanna see the signs and we're excited about the miracles and we love that he raised Lazarus from the dead. But we're in the middle of the times where Lazarus is still dead. And maybe we never see that resurrection on this earth. Maybe we don't see the healing on this earth. Maybe we don't see it restored right now. Is who Jesus is enough when I don't get to see what or why he's doing what he's doing? Will you close your eyes with me, church, right now? I want to see this message, guys, as a message of hope. And you know where you're at right now. You know what you might be wrestling with. I want to encourage you just to go to your Father, to listen to his voice. You may be hurting, but hear him whisper to you and say, I've got this. I'm in control. I am the light. You're walking with me. And as you walk with him, we will not stumble. Doesn't mean it won't be hard, but he's got us. Maybe you just need to say, Lord, help me. I want to believe, but I'm struggling right now. Or maybe you're someone that you've even struggled with Jesus, who he is. Maybe you've looked around you, you haven't actually even made that initial surrender. And I wanna encourage you, whether you're in this room, you're watching online right now, today can be the day where you say, Jesus, I surrender, I give my life to you, I want to follow you, take me, here I am. Not my will, but your will be done. Because we believe in who he is, Jesus, the Son of God, who came that we would have life with him. He suffered so we would have life. And so wherever you're at right now, I want to encourage you, just confess that to God. Ask him to help you believe. Ask him to show you more of who he is. Jesus, the Son of God, the Word that became flesh, that dwelt among us. Tammy and I will be in the back corner. We would love to pray with you. Otherwise, maybe grab someone next to you and pray as we worship, and let's meet with God this morning. Let's see what God wants to do. Guys, let's come with hope and experience his comfort. Let him weep with us and show us hope and his glory.